A warm welcome to Disky Talk with Luyolo. If you're tuning in for the very first time, I ask that you please subscribe and hit the notification bell. If you've been a part of this journey, I hope you thoroughly enjoy this episode. So, on today's episode, we discuss all things transfer talk. However, before we get into that, I'd like to introduce a returning guest. She goes by the name of Koketo. How are you doing?
Hi, Luyolo. I'm good, and you?
All is well. How has your week of football been?
It's been very interesting. I'm actually excited for this episode.
Yeah.
We have a lot to unpack.
Definitely. So, let's get right into it. Let's not waste any time. On today's episode, we are going to look at a plethora of football clubs who have done their business, some who are still trying to sign players within Europe. So, we will start with PSG. What do you make of the signings so far?
First of all, shout out to Pochettino. Because PSG generally has so much money, right?
Yeah.
But then they managed to get Donnarumma for free, Genie Wijnaldum for free, and now Ramos for free. These are big players, big-time players, stars. And he managed to get them for free. First of all, that's shout-out, right? Just generally. And then you get Ashraf Hakimi. Yes, you had to pay for him, which is fine because you got those three star players for free. I don't mind. I honestly don't mind paying for this defender from Dortmund.
Yeah. So it was Dortmund previously, Inter Milan. So
Oh, yes.
They broke the bank for him. And the next question then becomes, do you see all four of them slotting in immediately? Or do you think that certain players won't play because there's already quality in their respective positions?
I mean, with Gianluigi Donnarumma, I don't think him starting immediately. I think he, because, you know, the keeper there is quite solid.
Yeah.
And he's still a young keeper, you know. He still needs to be seasoned a bit. So he's going to take some time out a bit.
Yeah.
But in terms of Ramos, come on. He is like the best defender in the world right now. So I see him actually going in, and he's like a good replacement for Thiago Silva, which they didn't really replace him last season. And then with Ashraf Hakimi, I see him actually starting out as well. And then also, who's this? Genie Wijnaldum.
Yeah, Genie Wijnaldum.
Starting out. And they all play well to his system. I mean, with Ashraf Hakimi, I mean, what Pochettino likes to do is the fact that he likes wingbacks.
Yeah.
And Hakimi has the pace, Hakimi has the control. And you see it where, whenever his wingbacks go up, you get Neymar and Mbappe coming in.
Yeah.
Ashraf Hakimi will do well for them. And he's quite the creative one as well, with creating opportunities for goals and stuff. And with Genie Wijnaldum, another player who fits well into the system where attacking, he's there, but also, what Pochettino likes to do is the fact that whenever he loses the ball, he presses. And this is what Wijnaldum is known for.
Mm.
So they all fit in well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know. So when we look at Gianluigi Donnarumma, I think that's a great signing. It's one for the future.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't think he was on PSG's radar until they saw that, okay, he's free.
First of all,
we'll get him on a free. And I say that because PSG, before Donnarumma, they already had 8 goalkeepers, you know. But when they realized that negotiations had fallen through with AC Milan and other clubs weren't really coming to the negotiation table with regards to his wage structure, then PSG felt, okay, we stand a very good chance. Why not? Let's go for him, you know. My only qualm with the signing is that it may upset the apple cart with regards to Keylor Navas. And I say that because Keylor Navas has been one of their best players.
Yeah.
He's also a senior statement within that dressing room. So when you sign a Donnarumma, who's world-class in my opinion, and then you also have a Keylor Navas, and off the back of Donnarumma's performances at the Euros, you know, that's a player who expects to start, you know. And the difficult thing then becomes that, okay, fine, what then happens? Because now you have to manage these two egos. And this is not the first time this happens with Keylor Navas. Same thing happened at Real Madrid. They brought Thibaut Courtois in and Keylor Navas left, you know. So that's my only issue with the signing, and how will they work it out? I'm potentially looking at a rotation system because I just don't think that you can leave Donnarumma not to play throughout
the whole season.
You know?
Yeah. So I think maybe Donnarumma could play like in the league games, or the domestic cups, and then Kylian Navas will obviously play the league games, but the most crucial game, and Champions League.
So how I envision it, or how I see it, would be synonymous to Claudio Bravo and Ter Stegen at Barcelona with their rotation policy. So I'm looking at a possibility where you have Donnarumma playing the domestic cups in France, and then playing a couple of league games, and then you've got Keylor Navas as your Champions League goalkeeper. Because in my opinion, he's the perfect UEFA Champions League goalkeeper with regards to his experience and with regards to how well he's done throughout his UEFA Champions League career. You know, and then moving on to the man that will play in front of them, Sergio Ramos, the perfect signing. I feel like that's what they've needed. You know, they've needed a leader. And I felt that PSG haven't really had, you know, a leader. With all due respect to Marquinhos, who I think is a phenomenal player, I just think when it comes to his leadership skill set, it's just not on the same level as a Ramos. And I think Sergio Ramos is your captain's captain, you know, and that's how great Sergio Ramos is. And to get Sergio Ramos on a free,
oh my God,
it's so amazing.
What a steal.
Exactly. And I also think that, you know, a lot of people are quick to assume that once you reach a certain age, you're over the hill. I'm one person who doesn't believe in that. I don't look at your ID, but I look at your performances. I look at your legs. And if you can still go, then you're good to go. So Ramos, I think that is a perfect signing for PSG. I think he has to start right away. Obviously. You know, one can even go as far as saying that he might just get that armband off Marquinhos. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a possibility for that.
Who takes the penalties now? Okay, but we'll
who takes the penalties? It'll still be Neymar. And I say that because Neymar and Ramos actually have a friendship. They've got a long-standing friendship of 7 years. So Neymar did persuade Ramos to actually turn down English Premier League clubs for PSG. So there is that respect.
Oh, okay.
You know, so then when we look at Hakimi, I think Hakimi is the perfect player for PSG with regards to balancing the right-hand side. And I say that because PSG's offensive play is very lopsided. They're very dominant on the left-hand side by virtue of the fact that you have Neymar coming off the left, and then Mbappe would start as the striker. So they do like to operate from that left-hand side channel. Now when you have Hakimi, you've got a player. Exactly, there's a balance. And what I love about Hakimi is not just that he's quick, not that he's not just that he's an intelligent player, but he scores goals. And
versatile.
And not just goals which are from standard set piece situations, but he scores goals in open play, you know, and his finishing is also very good.
Yeah.
So he does then add a goal threat as well to PSG's offense, because at times I felt that in the big games, PSG are very limited with their goal threat. It's only Mbappe and Neymar. That's about it. Where do the goals come from? If Hakimi keeps is allowed to keep pushing, or if they play a back three and he plays as a wing back, he will be right up there. You know, you'll keep joining that front three continuously. So I think that is a perfect signing. Gini Wijnaldum, also another one. How do Liverpool let such a player go?
For free.
You know, I just don't understand, you know, the business that some of these clubs are conducting. However, I think the perfect player for Poch's system, especially when it comes to counter-pressing and how tactically adaptable he is as well, because then we do know that the scope of modern day football is shifting rapidly, so we could see Poch go with different systems depending on the types of players that he signs as well. And speaking of the types of players that he might sign, they are linked to Paul Pogba. What do you make of that? Do you think that they stand a chance of getting him, or it's just paper talk?
I think they do stand a chance of getting him. And for me, what was like a stamp of approval was the fact that Pogba hasn't really renewed his contract with United, right? Mm. So now it's like raising eyebrows, like, oh, okay, you're not planning to stay in this club for a while, and you know that PSG is, you know, looking for you, right? And now PSG is where, or France rather, is where Pogba is from. He plays for the French national team.
Yeah.
So you've got players there who you're going to play with in the national team. You've got Mbappe, you know, it just makes sense. And for PSG, I mean, that would be amazing, right? I would love to see Pogba actually play as a centre mid, because we know him as a centre mid. So using him for what he's, where he's really good at, like using his skills, just for what he's, you know what I mean? Like playing his original position. I would love to see him there. And I think, I honestly think he actually might go there. But I don't think PSG is willing to spend the money.
You don't think they're going to spend the 50 mil?
No, because they're willing to spend like 40 mil.
Yeah.
And United's like, nah, bring us 50.
Yeah.
Right? And if I'm United, I'm budging, you know, like, yeah. So rather I get paid for Pogba now than, you know, than nothing at all.
Yeah. So I think with regards to that, I think he stands a very good chance. And I think then PSG would just have to cough up the extra 10 because...
And they have it.
And oh the God. Thing is, they haven't had to spend much during the window, yeah. You know. And also, another component they could look at using is a player swap. You know, where you pay X amount of money and then they give them one of their players. Because when you're signing now Wijnaldum, you're signing all these players. So you there's players them, now, yeah. There's players now
Herrera who are, can go back.
Yeah, you know, Herrera can go back, you know. There's so many players you can offer. Julian Draxler, Paredes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's players that you can actually offer to Manchester United and say, okay, fine. You know what? Maybe we'll give you 20 mil, we'll offer you two players. 30 mil, we'll offer you two players. So I think he'd be a perfect fit in PSG. And I say that because if you look at the way Pogba tends to play at his best, you're looking at him in the French national team when he has a Kante behind him, right? In PSG, the man who'd fit the mold of a Kante is Idrissa Gueye.
Yeah.
That's where Idrissa Gueye, he sits deep and he'd allow Pogba to go and play.
Exactly.
You know, and Idrissa Gueye can do the whole lot. You know, he can tackle, he can play. He's very good at breaking down opposition. And he's a player who can play alone defensively in the midfield. He doesn't need a partner. Whereas for Manchester United, you know that it's always McFred. Yeah. You know, you need Fred and McTominay. And that's why Pogba doesn't quite fit into that. Because then there's Bruno playing as the 10. So in PSG, he's got Idrissa Gueye who would complement him very well. A Verratti who would complement him offensively as well.
And
you know,
mid, they were Gini.
Exactly. And then there's Gini Wijnaldum. So he's got players in and around him who will do the dirty work, which will allow him to play at his best.
Exactly.
And also, when you look at how Pogba normally plays for France, when he's got the two fullbacks going up and he's got the inside forwards inverting coming into the half spaces, that's what PSG do. They're
going
to have Hakimi up,
going
Bernat
up.
Okarazawa on the left hand side, Neymar Mbappe come in, and Di Maria as well. And then that's how he's able to get on the ball and dictate. So it's just going to be interesting to see if PSG are willing to cough up that money. But in all honesty, I think PSG should. You know,
yeah.
I think they should break
it's
the bank.
Worth it,
and it really is worth it because, like, you know, I think Pogba being in his natural setting, which is France, I think you're going to get the best out
exactly.
of him. Whenever Pogba's with the French national team, he looks
it's
at home.
It's a different... Exactly. It's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, so Pogba's one that I... Look, I'm a Manchester United fan. I would... Look, there's two sides of the coin to this Pogba situation, right? Firstly, from a subjective standpoint, I'd hate to lose him because I still think he's our best player, you know. It's just that we don't, Ole doesn't use him to...
His best
of
exactly.
So it's like...
And you do care about him. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
For you
yeah,
your career,
for you
yeah.
as a player,
yeah.
for your
yeah,
career.
Yeah.
Do you understand? A, Ole doesn't use him to the best of his ability. Secondly, Ole doesn't have much of a well-refined structure. So, if I ask you, what's Manchester United's style of play, philosophy? It's non-existent. So, do you want to pull Pogba in that? No. He plays much better when he's in a well-refined structure, which would predicate for consistency and his performances as well. And that's what Pochettino does very well. But the question then I want to ask you to wrap up this segment regarding PSG, what do you think it does then to... the balance of the squad? Do you think that from a dressing room perspective that it would work out with all those personalities, or are you one of those people who feel like it just might not work out, too many egos in one room?
I think it definitely could work out. Actually, it will work out, right, with Pogba, because all these players play from a personal standpoint, right, Pogba is, I wouldn't say close friends, okay, but like Pogba is, you know, very friendly with your Mbappe, with your Ramos, with Neymar. They're very cordial towards each other. There's no beefs, right? But then also, you get Pogba, who's just generally a leader. So in United, he was the leader. In France, he's like that guy in the locker room, just you know, cheering everyone up or giving motivational speeches. But then you get Ramos as well, who's also used to being a leader. That would be very interesting, but I don't think it's like do or die.
Yeah.
You know, it's those things like, yo, what's my role here?
Yeah.
Just let me know my role and then we can do it. Yeah. Because they all want the same thing. I mean, Ramos has enough Champions Leagues, but like the other ones, like, yeah, you know, they all want the same thing. So I think it's more of a thing of what's my role here?
Yeah.
Tell me, and then let's just get this Champions League.
Yeah, you know, and I think it would work out really well because a lot of these players, they approve of each other's skills. Exactly. You know, there's many times where Neymar has spoken of Pogba and how he plays football with a great degree of joy and a smile on his face. And we do know that the culture of Brazilian football, which is Joga Bonito, is based on playing football a certain way. Pogba fits that, you know. We do know that Pogba has many a times spoken highly about Neymar's ability to beat players. So these are players who more or less approve of each other.
Exactly.
And some of them have long-standing friendships, you know, from years when they were still rivals, you know. So I think if anything, they'll be a lot happier, you know. And I think that PSG squad could be moving in the direction of the French national team with regards to the brotherhood and how unified they are, you know. So you definitely need a team where unity is first, and you've got players who approve of one another's skills, you know. There's nothing better than having a teammate who trusts you, and nothing better than a teammate who knows that in the world you're the best at what you do, you know. So when you're looking at it from a defensive perspective, Neymar has spoken largely of Ramos. He's spoken largely of Marquinhos, and now he thinks he's one of the best defenders in world football.
Yeah.
So when you have two guys who you speak of highly, who you think are some of the best defenders in world football, playing within your team, you're confident, you know. And then when you have a hard-working player like Gini Wijnaldum, who's been there, done that, got the T-shirt with Liverpool, you're happy with that. When you have a Paul Pogba pulling strings in midfield, who you've spoken largely about his ability, you're happy. So I think then it raises the standard, you know, with regards to the technical acumen and ability of that PSG
and
squad.
And, you know, adding to your point, there were rumors, you know, I think last season, two seasons back, where Pogba was linked to Real Madrid. So the fact that he already wanted to play with Ramos anyways. Yeah. So it's a thing of... And Mbappe being linked to
Real Madrid.
You know, so they were already... Like, everything was just linked to each other. So they were going to play together anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, they were prepared
so,
for that.
So, from Pogba's possible future team to Pogba's current team, which is Manchester United, who have just announced the signing of Jadon Sancho. What do you make of that signing after years of chasing him and unsuccessful negotiations?
I want to say I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful for this signing, for United and Sancho's career, right? Because with United, like you said, the system's not really structured, right?
Mm.
But then, from what I've seen with Ole, like, he likes to play this 4-2-3-1 formation. But they've never really had, like, someone, like, a right wing. Mm. Someone who attacks really well, right? And Sancho is good both on the right and the left, right? But whereas on the right, because he's right, right-footed, he creates more shots, right? And then on the left, obviously, it's for him shooting, where he comes back in and then creates the shot. But with that current system, Sancho coming in, I think he would play in the right?
Yeah, on the right, yeah.
Yeah, on the right with, oh my God, with Mason Greenwood, because he was covering the right a bit, but they didn't really have like a solid right wing. So with Mason Greenwood and Cavani actually just giving each other, rotating, right?
Yeah.
And then Martial and then Rashford on the left.
Yeah.
I think it would actually help with the current team that United has. I'm very hopeful about the signing. I hope he actually gets game time.
Yeah.
I'm really sad of what happened with Donny. Oh my goodness, what an incredible mid.
Yeah.
What actually want Pogba to leave so that he can start playing, please. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I definitely agree with you. I think you walked right into the lineup because Manchester United, We didn't have a right wing. Do you understand?
Yeah.
We had to compromise by putting Greenwood there. You know, not his best position,
exactly.
But
now
because he's a
play,
phenomenal
yeah.
young player, he could fill that role very well. I just think you now have a person who specializes in that role, and I love the fact that you mentioned that how he comes off the right. You know, because modern day football, we've seen inverted wingers and inside forwards who
yeah.
would start on. On the opposite side,
and
looking to come in onto their strong foot.
Yeah.
But with Sancho, he's such a complete player that he's able to start on the right side, whereas he uses his right foot. And what a lot of people don't realize about him is his passing ability,
oh,
you
yes.
know, and
right.
box entries, penetrative passes, progressive
I mean,
passes in the final
with
third.
Hunt. He was just assisting.
The amount of assists that he has and how good he is on the ball is so phenomenal, you know, and that's what I really love about Jadon Sancho, you know, and how versatile he is. He could pop up as a 10 behind the striker,
yeah.
could pop up on the left-hand side. Very versatile and very complete attacking player. You know, he's very, very offensive. So when we now have a look at some of the players that they are linked to. So they're linked, we'll start with Kieran Trippier. That's a player that they possibly looking at. What do you make of Manchester United potentially snapping up Kieran Trippier?
A big thing with United for me has always been depth. Actually, just generally Premier League teams, because this team is, I mean, the league is demanding by itself, right?
Yeah.
So I think Trippier adds more depth to the team. In terms of starting lineup, I'm not quite sure, right? I'm not quite sure. And I don't know, there's just something, like you said, like the structure of the team, like where does he really fit in?
Yeah.
Where are you planning to put him? I just have so many questions regarding that link. I don't know. It's so
lukewarm.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. However, for me, I would welcome Trippier.
Really?
At right back, yes. Because I just feel like Wan-Bissaka is... He's not technically refined, A. Going forward, he's not the best, you know. Defensively, we all know he's sound.
Yeah.
You know, we all know
exactly.
that in world football, in a 1v1 situation...
Do you think he'd start?
Out wide, I think so. Because the reason why I think so is because in football, football is about partnerships. And you need somebody who's going to complement Sancho down the right-hand side. I don't think Wan-Bissaka does that from an offensive perspective. But with Trippier, he does that very well. With Trippier, Trippier has, in the past season, he had about 5, if I'm not mistaken, assists from first time pass or first time cross.
Wow.
That's how good he is in offensive situations. That's how good he is in the final third as well. A. B, his delivery, second to none, you know, very good on the ball. We all saw the assist that he made for Luke Shaw in the Euros in the final.
Yeah.
You know, that was a beautiful ball into the back post for Luke Shaw.
Oh, yeah,
so exactly. So when you're looking at Trippier, you're looking at another person who could potentially provide assist for United. And I think then Trippier then sort of, it helps us because it bypasses the problem that we have from midfield. Because in midfield, we feel as if we don't have enough penetration from Fred and McTominay. But when you have Trippier down the right, you have another creative player, whereas you've got Trippier down the right who's creative, you've got Sancho, and then you've got Bruno. Because
everything's balanced.
Yeah, it becomes a lot balanced. Because now,
because
on the left, Rashford, let's be honest, he's not the most creative player. He's always looking to come in, can play very well when he's got space in behind. But now things become balanced because on the left-hand side, Shaw and Rashford are establishing a relationship. On the right-hand side, Sancho and Trippier would establish a relationship.
Actually,
so,
I agree with you.
So, yeah. So, I then think that from that perspective, I think as United, then we start to see a bit of a bit more balance. Yes, we don't have a clear set system. However, I believe in football that sometimes when you have very good players, they themselves,
it
creates itself. And they can create a system for themselves. And you can have something which is very viable. And another thing that I like about Kieran Trippier is very good in 1v1 situations with regards to defending. So it's not like we're getting a downgrade on the defensive side, on the right-hand side, because he's still well adept when it comes to defending.
He's just more versatile.
You know, he's just more versatile. He gives us a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, also with progressing the ball from the right-hand side, what that could do then is what we could do is sometimes, from a tactical standpoint, is that you could have Trippier push up and you could have Sancho tucking in a lot closer to the striker, Cavani, you know. And then, because he plays with two pivots, you'll have one just drift to the right-hand side to cover Trippier, to allow Trippier to go forward.
That makes
so
much
it
sense.
Strengthens our right-hand
and
side.
And now the pressure of Bruno creating many goals just goes down. And
yeah, because now you got Sancho, you got Trippier.
There's so many people we can create. Okay, that makes sense. I agree with you.
Yeah, so from right back, we move to centre back. Varane is also another player. According to reports, it looks very imminent. You know, it does seem as if personal terms have been agreed. What do you make of that?
So, I actually want this to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Because people have been, the streets, all the Twitter streets, have been on Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
Right? And I think Harry Maguire does need support, you know? So, the addition of Varane, might actually help with the defense as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have nothing much. The fact that they want him and they agreed on personal terms, shout out. But you know, he was actually on the warm up squad with Real Madrid.
Mm.
So I don't think Real Madrid are gonna give him up so easily.
Mm.
But I would love to see him at United. Actually, United squad is looking very solid.
You see, it's
starting
to shape up, and that's what I'm saying. That you know what. Ole has failed me because he does not have a clear set philosophy and a structured way of playing. But with all these good players we're starting to bring through the door, hopefully they themselves start to create
but now
a way.
The question is like chemistry now.
Yeah.
Can they all play well together? And I'm not saying egos, just generally.
Just play.
Yeah.
I think so. And the reason why I think so, Nat, like I mentioned on the right-hand side, I think Trippier complements Sancho very well. Because if you look at Sancho, his best season at Dortmund was the 2019-2020 season, where he had Hakimi, a fullback who does what?
The same thing.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I think then he would fit really well. And then with Varane, the reason why I think Varane would complement Maguire is because Varane is a lot quicker than Maguire.
That makes sense.
And also, he's very comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
So now we're able to play out from the back. Not that I'm saying Lindelof isn't, because Lindelof is also very comfortable on the ball. But now you're getting Varane in, who's got a much higher level of pedigree when it comes to his career, when it comes to what he's won. This is a defender who's been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Some argue he could have even won the Ballon d'Or when Luka Modric won it, because he won the UEFA Champions League and the World Cup in that season. So this is a player who I think will slot right in, and he will complement Maguire, you know. And look, many people have their reservations about Maguire. Some feel he's world class, some people feel like he's not. But what I do know is that when you do get a Varane next to a Maguire, I think that will solidify our defense. And also, what I like about it is that Varane isn't a leader. So he's a very quiet, very laid-back guy. He plays a lot better when he's got a leader next to him.
Yeah.
That's why he's played well when he's had Ramos. So I think then when he's got a Maguire, who is that leader, it makes it a lot better. So it balances out. So I'm starting to see certain things and certain partnerships formulate on the field. But what would be perfect is if Pogba would stay and would get a defensive midfielder, then look at that 11.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that 11 goes from, I'm not sure, they can challenge for the title. So I think Varane would be a massive signing for Manchester United. I think it's what we need at centre-back.
Exactly.
You know, we need a world-class centre-back, you know, to complement a world-class Jadon Sancho and to complement the rest of the guys within the team.
Yeah.
And Kieran Trippier at right-back. So I'm starting to see certain patterns can formulate. I just hope that we get these deals over the line and we announce them. So moving from Manchester to Merseyside, the next segment is all things Liverpool. So what do you make of Liverpool's signing of Ibrahima Konate? We do know that he has made his debut for the Reds. He is a centre-back, young French, you know. What do you make of his signing?
Perfect. I mean, Liverpool were in trouble last season when they lost Virgil van Dijk due to injury, and then Gomez for a bit.
Mm.
So adding a young player is perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. And Liverpool struggled with depth.
Yeah.
Right? I think he adds more depth. And I would love him to start, but it's fine. He doesn't even have to start. Mm-hmm. You know, he can play your domestic cups, like we said, and a few Premier League games that, you know, where your Virgil van Dijk can rest, your Gomez can rest. I think, oh my God, that perfect. Yeah. Shout out, Jürgen. Like, that was perfect.
Yeah, and what I like about that, because for the longest time, Liverpool were actually interested in Koulibaly. So they were chasing Koulibaly's signature, and it was seeming very difficult because Koulibaly is a wanted man, A. Secondly, Napoli, not the easiest to negotiate with. You know, we look with Jorginho, with Insigne, you know, and the players who have been there at Napoli. So it wasn't really easy. And also, when I look at it, Ibrahima Konate is 6 years Koulibaly's junior. So with Konate, you've got a player that can be there for the next 10 years, you know. And what I like about Konate is that he now gives Klopp a different dimension with regards to the tactical approach. Because maybe now Liverpool can have a look at a back three. Because Konate under Julian Nagelsmann played as in a back three, as the right-sided centre-half. So he could play in a back three. So you're looking at a possibility where Liverpool could maybe go to a back three and then release Arnold, release Robertson as well. Because that's what they like doing. So now when they've got a back three, maybe, who knows, Arnold and Robertson could perform a lot better. Already you have Salah and Mane, who love coming in on the inside. You got Firmino, who drops in and plays as the false nine, as a creative force. And then in the midfield, you could have a pair of Henderson and Thiago, or Fabinho and Thiago, or Fabinho and Henderson. But personally, it would be Fabinho and Thiago, in my opinion. So it could change things tactically for Liverpool, which I think would be great for them, you know. So he is a player that adds a different dimension. And also with the injury-ravaged season that they had, you know, now it's about throwing caution to the wind, having those backup players. Because the difference is with Liverpool, when they went through that injury spell, they couldn't win anything.
Who were they?
But City, when they have anybody injured, they still go and win.
Exactly.
You know, they've won the league without De Bruyne. They've won the league without Aguero, without Silva, without Gundogan, without Sané. So they've won the league with players who were able to step in. Whereas with Liverpool, I worry about the depth.
That 11, and then from there,
then there's not much depth beyond that. But speaking of depth and midfield, we do know that Jorginho Wijnaldum will be playing his football in France for Paris Saint-Germain. We've touched on that. However, looking at a replacement, you know, so there's three names. You've got Saul Niguez, you've got Yuri Tielemans, and then you've got Nico Barella. So we'll start with Saul Niguez. What do you make of Liverpool potentially snapping him up? Do you think that he would fit the mold of what Klopp is trying to do?
I think so. I mean, looking at what, just generally, right, like the Liverpool and losing Gini Wijnaldum, a person who plays, you know, like you said, like hardworking first of all, and then pressing football as well.
Yeah.
I think he would make a great fit in, but you know, comparing him to the other two players you mentioned him with, I don't think he's the best out of all of them.
The options.
Yeah.
So my issue, right, with Saul Niguez is, I don't know. Like, I think he's a very good player. You know, personally, I love him. You know, I'm an avid follower of La Liga, you know.
Yeah.
And what he's done at Atletico Madrid in the past 6 years.
It's just generally, like, so with Spanish football, the focus is right there in the mid. I think, you know, he can control the game. He can create chances as well, but he can also defend. Like, so with the Spanish football, like, they mids, it's more of, can you attack? Yes. Can you defend as well? Are you versatile as a mid? Can you control the game? Can you relax when, you know, I think he would, and he fits so well in Klopp's system.
Yeah.
So it does make sense.
Yeah. So personally, I think he fits.
Yeah.
It's the next question then becomes, is he the best option? The answer is no.
Definitely.
You
not.
Know, so I think he fits because he can do a bit of everything. He can go box to box if you want him. He can sit deep if you want him. He can play as an eight and create for you. You know, he's got a goal in him as well. So he is a very good midfielder. but I just don't think he's the best. And I think Liverpool should be going for the best. The next man is Yuri Tielemans, who allegedly has been priced out of the deal by Leicester. But come on, we do know that in football, it's not over until that transfer window shuts. Yeah. You know, anything is still possible. Yeah. Liverpool could still revisit that. What do you make of Yuri Tielemans?
I think out of those options, he's the best.
Yeah.
And he has Premier League experience. Mm. You know, he knows how to win a Premier League. He knows what it takes to win a Premier League. So for him, it makes so much sense. I'm not quite sure with the system, but although like Leicester and Liverpool play like a similar style of football,
yeah.
It would be very interesting. But out of those options, I would go for him. He would be my first option. If he says no, yeah. Then I'll take other options.
Yeah. So I have to go the other way. The best option out of the three, in my opinion, is Nicolò Barella. And I love Barella. You know, one of the most exciting players to watch. And the reason why I say that is because you have to look at Liverpool from a deep laying perspective. They're already covered. Whereas Yuri Tielemans is, he's more of a deep laying midfielder. Yes, he can play as the eight. But I think Liverpool need a midfielder who gets a lot closer to the box, who's a lot more creative. And I'd go with Nicolò Barella, who, yes, like the other two midfielders, he can do a bit of both. He can play from deep. He can play as an eight. But what Nicolò Barella brings is that he brings creativity from a central perspective. Okay. And I felt that Liverpool have lacked that. A lot of their creativity comes from their two wing-backs, in Robertson and Arnold. And they haven't really had anything in the midfield. You understand? And they're false nine. Yeah. But they haven't really had a midfielder who can take the game by the scruff of the neck and start dictating play. And what that pivot to of Fabinho and Thiago would allow, what it would do for Nicolò Barella's game, it would just release him and allow him to play behind Firmino, you know, and he would then be able to link up play. And what I like about Barella is that he's also got a goal in him, you know, and we've seen that. It's just, now, can we get Nicolò Barella a lot further up the pitch? Can we get him in the final third? So I think he's the better suited one, A. B, Leicester, because we have to look at it from a financial perspective. Leicester want about 60 to 70 million for him, for Yuri Tielemans, you know, and they're pricing him out of the deal, right? But when you look at Nicolò Barella, I think Liverpool going for Barella, it suits what Inter Milan are trying to do. Inter Milan are trying to sell players.
Yeah.
We do know that they're trying to balance the books, so they've already sold Hakimi. So their target, if I'm not mistaken, is about 90 million. So they've sold Hakimi for 60 million.
Wow.
If Liverpool come in, and they only want about 40 million for Barella.
They're good.
As opposed to the 60, 70 you have to pay, which is 30 million less.
Yeah.
I would then look at Barella. Because then it fits financially. It fits. FSG are known to go for smart signings, if I would say, as opposed to breaking the bank. With Nicolò Barella, I don't see them I don't see them having to break the bank. I don't see much competition for his signature. And it would suit the needs of Inter Milan. And we do know that within a transfer window, when you are negotiating, the best deals are done when it suits the agenda of the team, which definitely holds the player.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, can you impress the seller? You know, it's in most cases, it's about the seller and their feelings. So I think that would suit them. And from a playing perspective, like I touched on, it would allow him to play a lot further forward. And they need somebody who's a bit of a creative genius in midfield. Yes, Thiago can do that. However, I just think Thiago likes dictating from a lot deeper. You need a person who plays in the final third and a person who gets a lot closer to the box. So I think Nicolò Barella fits that. Also, a young player, very strong, very adaptable. And what I love about him is the system that he plays in for Mancini and from Inter Milan as well.
Yeah.
I think it's the perfect hybrid because you've got the hard-working essence that he picked up from an Antonio Conte, and then you've got the technocrat and the technical genius that he has that he picked up from a Mancini. You put that together, you have a player who's ready to be coached by a Klopp.
That makes sense. You put the two together. Klopp loves that, yeah.
So I think he would be great also for counter-pressing because he's also got legs. Whereas when I look at Yuri Tielemans, I don't think from a pressing perspective, he ticks the box on the same level as a Barella would, but a Barella counter-presses very well, and that's what he does for Italy, you know. So I really love him, very adaptable. When things are tough for Liverpool in the midfield, he will drop in and become the third guy in midfield who is going to do the dirty work and help out. Very strong, and he can combat as well. So I don't think the league and with its physicality would be an issue for him. And then when Liverpool have the ball possession and they're dominating, he pushes further forward. So I think it's very important to have a tactically flexible footballer within that Klopp system. But anyway, it remains to be seen as to who will go on to replace him. But I just hope that who goes on to replace Gini Wijnaldum, sorry. But I just hope it's Nicolò Barella. I'd love to see him in the Premier League. I think that is one of the best midfielders in world football right now. But anyway, let's move it to Borussia Dortmund. So what do you make of their tough stance that they take when it comes to the transfer window? We do know that they're very difficult side to negotiate with when it comes to the transfer window.
All the time. And I don't understand why, because, for me, they need to understand that they are a club that is known for their development, right?
Yeah.
You groom older players, younger players, so they can go get signed by old. This has always been a system, right?
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they get difficult when they've already groomed a player. Yeah. Now it's time for them to actually
go to
the big leagues. I honestly don't understand. And they do have the money, right? And they're not looking for. So whenever they do signings, it's never a star, you know. It's always either an older player who's there just to hold things down, or a younger player they're planning to develop.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I also don't understand, you know. It doesn't make sense to me. However, what I do understand is that they realize who they are in the room. So in the room, they are the person who they hold the bargaining power. Do you understand? And the reason why they hold the power is because A, their young players are on the biggest platform, which is UEFA Champions League football. They do really well.
Yeah.
And with regards to the stock of those young players, it continues to increase.
All the time.
Like, it continues to increase.
So that's what I'm saying. So they're known as like a development, you know, like a club where they groom players, right? But for me, rather sell the players while they're up there or let them go for free. Because eventually players are going to be like, okay, now I want to play for your Real Madrid. I want to play for your United.
Yeah.
What happens then?
I'm going to run the contract down.
Exactly.
You know? So I just think that so far, so good. They've been getting it right.
Working well.
It's working well for them. It's just, I think they must just be very careful, because there will come a day where they lose out. They're the biggest losers, you know.
And you want to keep relationships with other clubs.
Yeah. And I think they should just, that's their business model. That's what keeps their club afloat. So I think that they should be doing that, you know. And speaking of Borussia Dortmund, a player who's been on everybody's lips, Erling Haaland. Do you foresee him moving this transfer window, as we do know that he's linked to both Chelsea and Manchester City? Or do you feel like Borussia Dortmund will play hardball and say, uh-uh?
I mean, I wish they don't let him go. I don't see them, you know, letting him go. They already lost Sancho.
Yeah.
Come on.
So if 120 million is put on the table...
For her, nah. And also, so City has money, right? Let's not forget. City has money.
Yeah.
But that manager is also quite the stingy one. Mm. Yes, he sees value in the player, but there's a certain limit where he's like, actually, it's not worth it. You know, I can get other players elsewhere. So he's very smart. Pep is quite the smartest manager. So if I'm Dortmund, I'm keeping my striker just for one more season.
Yeah,
you know, let his stock go up. Let's grow his stock. Then I'll sell him for much more than worth, you know, than what he is right now.
So with regards to that, now it's a bit of a difficult one. I say that because Chelsea are prepared to spend the money with regards to signing Haaland, right? And the reason why, if I was Dortmund, I would just accept and let him go is because, look at the current situation that we're in as the world, the pandemic, right? And if you think about it, how many clubs will offer you that money again, you know? And you're Dortmund. You've been there, done that, got the T-shirt. You've developed some of the finest talent, you know. And you've had strikers there before who've done very well, you know. If I were Dortmund, I would take that money. And when they take that money, Dortmund have 200 million plus. So do you realize that they could go into the market and they could sign another young quality player, even for 50 million, where you know that in the next 2 to 3 years, he'll develop and you can sell him for 100 million, you get your profit back.
I think, so looking at the trade-off, rather I stay with Haaland.
Yeah.
Because who is this next striker who can replace Haaland? Who is this young player who can replace Haaland right now? No, rather I stay with Haaland. But also with Chelsea. Honestly, how many forwards do you have? I mean, they just lost Giroud, right?
Yeah.
So how many forwards do you have? Now you want to add Haaland to that? Come on. Just let the boy go. Leave him. He's fine there at Dortmund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving from Dortmund, let's now go to Munich. Widespread reports with regards to Robert Lewandowski. He's also linked to Chelsea and Manchester City. I guess this is where the domino effect comes into play, because if Haaland does get the move, then you would see then a Robert Lewandowski either going to the other team that Haaland didn't sign for, or you could see him staying. If Haaland doesn't go, then possibly Lewandowski. If not Lewandowski, then it's Harry Kane, you know.
Yeah.
But now, speaking to Robert Lewandowski, what do you make of the potential of him leaving Bayern Munich, and what would it mean for Bayern Munich if he was to depart?
So just like Haaland is, like his role there at Dortmund, I think Lewandowski is similar, right?
Yeah.
Very important role. Irreplaceable.
Yeah.
Right? Who's there to replace Lewandowski? And it would be such a huge loss for Bayern. So I would do everything to keep him, right? With him signing for City and Chelsea, he's been, you know, he's been under Pep before. He's played under Pep before. So that relationship is still there. He can really understand his system, you know. And with Chelsea, again, they have so many forwards.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, stop it. Right.
Yeah.
So with City, it would make sense in the sense of you understand the language this guy speaks. It's so easy for you to dwell in, and a girl just left. So there's your number nine, right? But I wouldn't, because now what Pep likes to do is play the false nine, and I'm like, okay, how is I'm trying to put in Lewandowski. They're like, where are you going to fit in there? You know, he loves the false nine. And I don't, Lewandowski is not, his ball control is not, you know, refined.
Yeah.
He's more of a, just feed him.
He's the target man.
You know what I mean? Like, he knows where the target is. He just shoots. So it would be very interesting to see Man City, but I would rather keep him at Bayern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just think that Robert Lewandowski is irreplaceable, man. Like, where do Bayern go from there, you know? And when he got injured last season, we saw how they struggled in Champions League. In the league as well, you know, there was they struggled in the league without him. Where games where they would win comfortably, now they were winning 1-0, scoring in the last 10, it was tough, you know? So I personally, as Bayern Munich, I would do everything in my power to keep him, you know. The only issue, though, and this is where I throw a spanner in the works, is him not really, he's not really interested in signing a new contract with Bayern, right? It's either you take the 60 mil now, or he leaves for free next transfer window.
Oh,
so
rather give him money.
You see, that's where the problem comes, you know. Unless they can convince him and say, you know what, Robert Lewandowski, we're going to offer you X amount of money. Now it's about breaking the bank for him to stay, you know.
I think he's worth it.
And definitely, you know. And after the season he had, where he broke the 41-goal record in the Bundesliga. So it's a tough situation, you know. And that's what I like about transfer talk, you know. We get to dissect some of these nuances within the transfer window, which make everything a lot more exciting. Because you're looking at the possibility of this guy saying, I'll run down my contract and leave for free. Or the club can get 50 mil now or 60 mil. So it's very interesting to see how it plays out. But I think Lewandowski holds all the cards to his future. I think he's got the bargaining power here, because you don't want to end up in a situation where you have a player who doesn't want to sign a new contract, and you know you will leave for free next season.
And he's worth so much money.
Exactly. And the problem then becomes that with Bayern Munich, wherever Lewandowski goes, you're not just strengthening another team from another league. You're strengthening direct competition for UEFA Champions League football. That's what you 100%. Have to be cognizant of, because Bayern Munich compete on that scale. And if you were to go to a Manchester City or a Chelsea, that strengthens them.
Yeah.
And in the UEFA Champions League, he'll come.
He makes any team stronger. Actually. Yeah.
Any team he goes to. So I just hope that Bayern Munich actually hold on to him, because, yeah, no, that would be.
Exactly. Okay, I love the fact that now players have just a bit of control in the future, you know? You get players who just get sold. I mean, I'm a Barca fan, and, you know, seeing a tour get signed to an Italian team, you know, like, he didn't have any control. Now we want him back, but yeah, we'll get to that. But, you know, stuff like that, I like the fact that he's like, nah, I'm taking control of my future. I don't want to be here if you guys don't, you know, value me, cool. Yeah. I can go elsewhere. These other teams who want me there.
Mm. So, moving on then to Barcelona. You know, a lot has been happening with regards to their financial situation and players. What do you make of that whole financial controversy with regards to them having to sell players to balance the books?
So, we've been in a financial situation for quite some time now. So, I'm not surprised, to say the least. But it's so, for me as a boss, it's so heartbreaking. Like, what? Right? Even the signings that don't make sense. So, first of all, we're getting players for free, right? We don't have any other option but to get players for free. And now we're trying to offload players because we can't afford them. Or we're trying to take them on loan because we can't afford them.
Yeah.
And it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was going to happen because it's not like it just happened. We've been under, you know, under financial difficulties for quite some time. But at the same time, you know, I don't think we still have solid players, right? Mm. I would love for us now to stop looking elsewhere and start looking within.
Yeah.
You know, our youth.
Yeah.
These are free players. These are free players who know the system, who've been playing in the system for quite some time. They don't even have to adapt, right? You know what I mean? So rather look within and then let's build. And I don't mind. And I didn't mind losing Messi. I was like, rather we lose him and let's build a younger team. Whether we don't win now, I know with this system, it's worked before. We can win later. So rather we invest in our youth system.
I definitely agree with you on that. You know, I've always felt that La Masia was the way, and
exactly.
The biggest problem is if you've seen a business model work out, why would you stop? Why would you go against the grain? You know, and it just didn't make sense to me. You know, you touched on Lionel Messi, who reportedly will be signing a 5-year deal and taking a wage cut. What do you 50%. Make of that?
50%. For me, it just solidifies the fact that he really loves us and we love him too.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want him to stay, right, because of our financial situation and for his situation.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact that he wants to stay, I'm like, I mean, who would want Messi in their team? You know, like, I bet, let's go.
Yeah. So, personally, I'm going to swing the other way. I'm going to be very controversial, viewers at home. So, I don't think he took a 50% wage cut.
Yeah.
I say that because it's a 5-year deal on 500k a week.
Okay.
If you calculate that, I think that's the amount of money they were going to pay him over 2.5 years. But now they've prolonged the deal. That's my own opinion. Because would then Barcelona pay him 1 million? Because that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
1 million a week for over 5 years. I don't think so.
So he is taking a wage cut, though.
I don't think so. I just think it's strategic in a sense because he is paying him money.
There's a part where like he's losing money that he could actually make.
But this is my point, ne? And I acknowledge what you're saying, ne? I'm saying to you, ne? I could say to you, I'm gonna give you 10 million rand, ne? But I won't give it to you in 2 years. I'll give it to you over 4 years.
So at the end of the day, it's still fair. I hear
you. You see what I'm saying? That I just feel that
it's still 10 more. Yeah.
It's strategic in a sense. Yes, for now, on the balance of things, on a face value, it's wage cut. Yes, right? Because you won't get that money now.
Yeah.
But over the span of
the
5 years.
Still the same. The
yes, do you understand? Okay, yeah. Regarding his age, nah? And let me ask you this, as a Barcelona fan, do you think that he would have been offered that amount, $1 million a week for over 5 years?
At his age?
At his age.
Honestly, no. Objectively, no, right? But he could easily get in another team. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You know, like...
Look, that partner... So, where I have to start off and I have to acknowledge... He loves Barcelona.
Yeah.
It's clear. It's set in stone. After the way Bartomeu treated him... After the way Bartomeu treated him... And after how things went pear-shaped with Barcelona... He's still staying. When he could go to PSG and earn lots of money.
Exactly.
He could go to Man City and earn lots of money. But this is where I throw the spanner in the works. Would PSG and Man City offer him a long-term contract, 5 years? I don't think so.
Oh, okay, yes.
But so Barcelona would.
Yeah, so the duration of the contract, definitely not. But I think the amount he would definitely get.
Yes, but not for 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
So then, if you think...
He's still losing, okay.
You see, that's my...
Makes sense.
That's my unpopular opinion. However, viewers at home, please do weigh in on Messi's wages. So, yeah, definitely. So, in the extra time segment, let's wrap up this episode. So, it has been reported that Manchester City are willing to pay the 160 mil for Harry Kane. What do you make of that? Do you think that deal is going over the line? Or do you think that it's not going to happen? It's just paper talk.
No. I think it could. No, it will. Right? Because first of all, Harry Kane doesn't really want to be in Tottenham, right? And for me, it makes so much sense because he's been playing false nine this whole season under Mourinho, right? And he's been doing a good job at that. All you have to do, just slot him in Pep's system.
Yeah.
Same role.
Yeah.
Come on. It like makes curtains. Come on.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. I would love to see him there. It totally makes sense. 160, I don't know how much he's worth.
Yeah.
But I would, because we still don't have a replacement for Aguero.
Yeah, yeah. So personally, I've been very vocal on this with regards to the false nine, you know, and I always maintain that false nine is a system as opposed to an isolated position.
Yeah.
And I say that because
it's the whole system. Yeah, do you understand? From the key,
So if you're looking for a player who ticks all the boxes, can score goals, great pedigree, can create, knows the league, and very sharp, very lethal, and can still fit into the way Pep wants to do things, it's Harry Kane. It's as clear as daylight.
It makes all the sense. And to think that he's been like top scorer with Aguero right there, dude, you're the perfect replacement.
Perfect replacement.
Makes sense.
Hmm. So, we've come to the end of a very special episode of Disky Talk with Riolo. I think we ended it off perfectly. Perfect. Makes sense. Perfect. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Wow.
But anyway, Koketso, thank you very much for coming through and blessing me with your knowledge and insight. I must say this and give you your flowers on the podcast that I think you're very, very wise, very knowledgeable.
Thank you.
I actually enjoy having you on the podcast. So viewers at home, you will be seeing a face a lot more. So
thank you for having me, Leona.
Okay,
this was fun. I enjoyed being here.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. So viewers at home, please do weigh in on the transfer talk with regards to the players who are coming, going. Tell us what you think about some of the clubs that we've touched on. And thank you very much. Signing out.
Like, subscribe, share, everything.